agree on abortion, but we can still agree that this heart-wrenching decision for any woman is not made casual. It has both moral and spiritual dimensions. Let us work together to reduce the number of women seeking abortions. Let's reduce unintended pregnancies. Each side will continue to make its case to the public with passion and conviction. But surely we can do so without reducing those with differing views to caricature. The fact is that at some level, the views of the two camps are irreconcilable.
Of course, that's President Barack Obama addressing on Sunday the commencement of the class of 2009 at Notre Dame University, a famous Roman Catholic university. Some within the pale of the Roman Catholic Church found that very disturbing. And although I don't sit within the pale of the Roman Catholic Church, I also find it disturbing, not only for the particular reasons that others do, but also for this reason. Notre Dame is without a doubt one of the great universities in our nation that has as its roots the church's efforts to educate. It was at one time a thoroughgoing Roman Catholic university. What's become of it? Or has something become of it? Is it still Roman Catholic in the proper sense? So we'll talk about the secularization of Christian higher education in light of President Obama's commencement address at Notre Dame on Sunday. Greetings and welcome to Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilk, and we're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 20th of May. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE. We have an in-studio email address as well, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. After we talk about President Obama's commencement address at Notre Dame with Jennifer Roback Morse, we'll discuss the science of spirituality. Some people say that God can be induced as an experience through chemical means or other means in the laboratory, or that we might have a God gene that explains our beliefs in a God, but really just the product of evolution. We'll talk about the science of spirituality with Dr. Angus Manouge of Concordia University, Wisconsin, for the second half hour. 1-877-623-6943 or talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Your general reaction to the president's address at Notre Dame this weekend?
Todd, I was so distressed by that. I couldn't sleep. I was so upset by the whole thing. Honestly, what he did, among other things, was to basically marginalize the people who don't agree with him under the guise of sounding like he's being Mr. Inclusive and Mr. Reasonable. The fact is that he took sides in an internecine Catholic battle, and he has basically made it sound like anybody who doesn't agree with him and his approach is somehow beyond the pale. And, honestly, I found the whole thing extremely distressing.
As a Roman Catholic, what are your thoughts on Notre Dame inviting him and honoring him with an honorary degree in law?
Oh, it's a nightmare. Todd, it's absolutely a nightmare. I mean, as soon as they made the invitation, there was no way that the Orthodox traditional side could possibly outflank that maneuver. You know, in other words, I liken it to this. Do you remember when Columbia University invited Ahmadinejad to speak on their campus? It's a complete public relations coup for the president, President Ahmadinejad, and President Obama. No matter what anybody says or does, no matter what kind of protest people might make, for the rest of his life, he can say, I've got an honorary degree from Notre Dame, and they honored me, and so therefore I fit within the mainstream of the Catholic tradition. And that is so not true. It is so false. It's just extremely distressing to me that he did that, and honestly, that the university did. Honestly, you know, there were a petition of over 350,000 Catholic names presented to the president of the university in protest against this. Over $8 million worth of donations are being withheld from Notre Dame because of this. Mary Ann Glendon refused the honor that they were going to offer her. many, many good and decent Catholic people have done their best to protest against it, but there is not a thing we can do about it. Basically, the current administration of Notre Dame University has decided that it is going to stand itself against the Catholic bishops and the teaching of the Catholic Church, and they're just going to do what they feel like doing. And they've got Obama telling them that, gee, you guys are great Catholics, you know, and the rest of us are just sitting on the sidelines basically being told that we don't count. And it's really a nightmare as far as I'm concerned.
What single thing disturbed you most about the president's commencement address?
Well, you know, part of it is that he sounds like he's being so open-minded and inclusive and generous and all of that. But when it comes right down to action, this is the most pro-abortion politician in America. I mean, when he was in the Senate, he had the most pro-abortion voting record of anybody in the Senate. He voted for things in Illinois, right there in your backyard. He voted for things in Illinois that nobody would vote for, you know. So for him to position himself as somehow a moderate or a compromiser or something like that, that's just so false. That is just so misleading. That I just found it repulsive that he would do that, and at the same time, to make it sound like he's offering an olive branch, when in point of fact he's not offering anything to anybody. You know, the things that he is proposing, the things that his administration has already done, those are extremely pro-abortion kinds of policies, and you know how anybody can be taken in by this kind of thing. I guess what was the most upsetting, Todd, is the disconnect between his words and his actions. You know, he's going to say whatever he thinks he needs to say to woo the next generation of Catholic voters. Make no mistake, that's what that mission was about. From his point of view, President Jenkins delivered to him an audience of future pro-Catholic voters, and that was what it was all about for Obama. It was for him to woo those kids to say, you can vote for me in good conscience, for him to stand there and do that. And at the same time, his administration is promoting the most pro-abortion policies ever. For nobody to call him out on that, for nobody to say anything about that, it's an outrage. Everything about it is just wrong.
How did Notre Dame get to this particular point?
Boy, that is a good question. I wish I knew the answer to that. You know, there have been books written on the question of how the colleges in general, and Catholic colleges in particular, became secularized. The general story of schools becoming secularized is usually told as if it were an inevitable trend of secularization that just had to happen because all thinking people are ready to abandon religion, and it's basically in the air, and it's inevitable that any place that has people who are thinking and who are intelligent and who are pursuing higher degrees, sooner or later they're going to throw religion under the bus. Well, the reality is that secularism was not something that happened naturally. It was something that was pursued by people who wanted it to happen. I recently read in Proof a new book on this subject that I'll tell you about when it comes out. But one of the things the author points out is that way back at the turn of the 20th century, I suppose it was in the 20s or 30s, there was a concerted push to get the schools to drop their religious identity. And one of the tools that they used was the pension funds. The pension funds for the college professors. You could get pensions if you would abandon your religious designation. And within 4 years, all the colleges had done so. It's a shocking thing to me. Once the book comes out, you really should have the author, Hunter Baker, come on and tell you the whole story. But so there's a general story like that affects all of the colleges in America. But then there's a particular Roman Catholic slant to it, which has to do with Vatican II and the misinterpretations of Vatican II. What did Vatican II really mean, and how are we supposed to implement it? A lot of people took that as a sign that the church could change. Well, if the church can stop eating meat on Friday, the church can change in any dimension. And so all sorts of people started pushing and pushing for all kinds of things to change. And within that context, the biggest single thing, of course, was the birth control encyclical, Humana Vitae, which Notre Dame, among other schools, was in open revolt against Humana Vitae from the very beginning. And so it's not surprising that they have come to this pass when it gets right down to it. But I think that this Notre Dame event is a defining moment for American Catholicism. I mean, it's extremely clear now that the bishops are on one side and that the colleges are on the other side, and the Catholic faithful are going to have to decide whether they're going to put their money into schools like Notre Dame or whether they're going to send their kids to a nice state university at half or a third or a quarter of the cost, where the state university has an outstanding Newman Center on campus. You know, kids are much better off in a lot of cases doing something like that. So in my opinion, putting your money into a school like Notre Dame right now is a tremendous waste of Catholic philanthropy. And people should be giving to their local school. They should be giving to their own parish. They should be giving to, frankly, organizations like the Ruth Institute. But for Catholic philanthropists to pump their money into a school like Notre Dame is a complete waste, and people should stop doing that. And I think a lot of people are on notice and are going to stop doing it, you know. In the immediate aftermath, as I mentioned, there's already at least $8 million worth of donations where people have signed a statement saying, we were going to give, but we're not giving now. So hopefully that will cause some changes and cause other people, other donors, large and small, to follow suit.
All right. Can we have a few minutes from you on the other side of the break?
Sure.
All right. I've got a couple more questions for Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founder of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason University. She's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. 1-877-623-6943 or talkback at issuesetc.org. Talking about the secularization of Christian higher education, the occasion, of course, is President Obama's commencement address at Notre Dame University. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest. Our email address on this Wednesday afternoon, the 20th of May, talkback at issuesetc.org. Our call in number 1-877-623-6943. Matt in Nebraska writes, do many American Catholics simply not understand what the Roman Catholic Church teaches on abortion? Jen?
Well, I think it's impossible for any sentient life form in the United States of America to not know what the Church teaches about abortion. However, that said, I'll bet you that the implied in the caller's question there, I'll bet you there's not 10% of American Catholics who can give a coherent account of why the Church teaches what it teaches. And that's a real tragedy. So for the average Catholic, and indeed for the average person in America, everybody knows that the Church is implacably hostile to abortion, but they really don't know why. And so therefore, the bishops just seem like a bunch of, they don't seem very credible. And the real problem is that the Church's consistent teaching about abortion, contraception, marriage, sexuality, family, all of that gets wrapped up in a big bundle of no's and prohibitions and all sorts of things you can't do. And the coherent, positive teaching of what the Church is positively for, that seems to be the Church's best-kept secret. Nobody seems to understand that all of those prohibitions are really trying to point people towards the great good of lifelong married love. So I think very few people can articulate a full-fledged, honest-to-goodness explanation for why the Church teaches what it does and why the Church is, frankly, never going to change its teaching. There's no question about that. The Catholic Church will not ever revise its position in these areas. It cannot revise its position in these areas. This is the truth given to us by God through the apostles, down through the current holder of the Apostolic See of Peter. You know, we're not going to change this position because this is what is really true, and it's our responsibility to hold it. So the fact that people don't get it, that's our marketing problem, I would say. But I think the emailer is correct in his implication that most people just don't get it.
Matt also asks, is there a situation wherein a pro-abortion politician should be allowed to speak at a truly Catholic university?
The situation I could imagine like that would be where there would be a debate on the subject. I think it would be perfectly appropriate for Notre Dame, Georgetown, any place, to have an honest-to-goodness, full-fledged debate on any of these topics, including abortion, where you'd have an articulate spokesman, the politician, on one side, and somebody who can offer a debate, who can honestly offer a full-fledged explanation for the opposite side. So in that case, that would be fine. To give a pro-abortion politician, or indeed a pro-abortion anything, just a platform from which they can stand there and pontificate their views without any organized response, I don't think that's ever appropriate at a Catholic university, because it's just that those people do not need any additional microphones. They have plenty of time at the mic, and they don't need to stand up at a Catholic school and do it.
So,
and furthermore, there's never a reason to give an honor to a pro-abortion politician, whether Catholic or non-Catholic. It was absolutely beyond the pale for Notre Dame to give Obama an honorary law degree. That there was no reason for that whatsoever, and that made it 100% clear that they weren't simply trying to engage him in dialogue, but that they intended to honor him, and that was inexcusable.
Some would say Notre Dame is so far gone, it should drop all pretense of its association with the Catholic Church. But I want to ask you, what can be done to reclaim our Christian colleges and universities?
Well, that's a wonderful question. And there are one of the things, I've visited Notre Dame several times, and one of the things that I have noticed there is that the Catholic students are much more Catholic than a lot of the faculty. And so the dynamic that I'm seeing is that the students are pulling the school back towards its Orthodox roots. Some of the alumni are doing the same kind of thing. I think it's very, very important for the alumni and the contributors to use all of the tools at their disposal to push the schools in the direction of maintaining their Christian identity, their denominational identity, their broadly Christian identity. The donors should absolutely make it clear what they want to see the school do. I believe that is the only thing that a university president will understand is dollars. So if there were enough Lutheran donors who would say, we want honest to goodness, solid Lutheran Orthodox teaching at Concordia University or wherever it might be, that's what's going to get the administration's notice, and nothing short of that. You know, honestly, there's only so much that the students can do. There's only so much that the alumni acting in a disorganized way can do. But if the alumni would make a concerted effort to target their donations, to make it clear why they're doing it, and to say we'll support this but not that, or we'll support this on the condition that, the more the donors do that, the better, frankly. And I don't think anything less than that is going to amount to a hill of beans.
Finally, then, make the case that America as a society needs, as a vital part of its intellectual life, the Christian mind represented in higher education.
Oh, Todd, that's such a wonderful question. So wonderfully worded. I mean, first of all, people should remember that the whole idea of a university was actually invented in the Middle Ages by the Catholic Church, and that most of the colleges that we have, the non-state colleges, were founded by Christian denominations who wanted to train their own people, and oftentimes to train their own clergy. And so what I believe America needs is a thoughtful engagement of the whole Judeo-Christian tradition, which only we can bring to bear. I mean, I think if you look at what's happened in higher education around the country, in school after school, we've got postmodernism and moral relativism and people who are actively hostile to reason itself, people who don't believe that there is any truth out there to even be discovered. So why you would want a university in a world where there is no truth, I can't quite figure out what is the point at that point. But it's only the Christian colleges that are willing to say there is such a thing as truth. Truth is a person who has revealed himself to us, and And in so doing, he has revealed to us that the universe itself is an ordered universe that is fit for human habitation, and that he wants us to learn and understand and unpack that universe. He wants us to learn and to know. And I think that higher education itself desperately needs that kind of affirmation of reason and of truth, and that no one except Christian higher education, and some of the Jewish schools too, probably, but no one short of the religious colleges are in any position to mount that case anymore. The secular universities are basically letting themselves be undermined from within by the attack on reason and the mind itself. So at this point, it's perfectly obvious that American society desperately needs the Judeo-Christian universities and all that it offers.
On the subject of higher education, the Ruth Institute is sponsoring a conference in early August for college students. Tell us a little bit about
It Takes a Family to Raise a Village. Yeah, we sure are. A conference called It Takes a Family to Raise a Village for college students. The theme of this conference really is to help college students understand marriage so that they can look forward to lifelong married love themselves, and also to be able to offer an intellectual defense of it, and also to be able to create a kind of social climate that is favorable to marriage and that is an alternative to the hookup culture that is so prevalent on campuses. And so, really, I mean, there's an example of what we're talking about, isn't it, Janelle, that it's the Christian students who can understand that marriage is something. Marriage isn't just whatever we say it is, but that there's some substance there that needs to be understood, defended, and protected. And so we'll be having students come to the University of San Diego for a long weekend in August. We'll be giving them material from a variety of academic disciplines, including law, medicine, sociology. The conference will be completely free to the students, including their room and board right there on the campus. And they'll come home with a bunch of books and articles and a lot of new friends, too. So we're really looking forward to it, and we would certainly welcome applications from all of the Issues Etc. listeners.
Folks, we'll post a link to It Takes a Family to Raise a Village under the on-demand page of our website tonight, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks a million, Todd.
Coming up on the 30th of June, we'll be marking an anniversary here at Issues Etc. It's a short anniversary, but it's a significant one to us, and I know to our listeners as well. The one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc. to the airwaves. That's June 30th. Can you believe it's been 1 year? Well, we kind of have to believe it because the years roll by, but we want to mark that milestone by celebrating with you, our listeners. We're going to do that by having an open house here at LPR Studios in Collinsville, Illinois. You can come in, watch the show being done live on Tuesday, June the 30th, beginning at 4 p.m., and then you can join us afterwards. We'll have some food. I think we even have our barbecue master rounded up. We just received an RSVP from a couple in Michigan who will be coming down to attend the anniversary, the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc. with us Tuesday, June the 30th, beginning at 4 p.m. here at LPR Studios in Collinsville, Illinois. You need to RSVP, and that means you need to send Craig that RSVP, craig@issuesetc.org, craig@issuesetc.org. When we'll come back, we're going to be talking about the science of spirituality. Dr. Angus Manouge will be our guest.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.